If you're like me, you love and miss that golden era of Christian music. From the Jesus music of the 70s, the monster vocalists of the 80s, and the creativity and risk-taking of the 90s and early 2000s. I'm Andy Christman, and for the past four decades, I was privileged to be smack dab in the middle of this crazy and beautiful thing that we call CCM. As a member of the group For Him, I got to know so many great people with even greater stories, and I don't want to keep these stories to myself. That's why I created One Degree of Andy, so you can join me as I reminisce with my friends and colleagues. My hope is that as you experience these conversations, you'll go back and listen to that golden era of music and fall in love all over again, just like I have. This is the One Degree of Andy podcast. Oh man, this may be my favorite episode yet. I've been playing an epic game of phone tag with Gary Chapman over the last 6 months, and I finally got him in the room, and man, this did not disappoint. Gary is one of those who has no filter and will say just about anything, and just a great storyteller. I know you're really going to enjoy one of the legends of Christian music, and you cannot tell the story of CCM without my guest today, Gary Chapman. And of course, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know what's coming. I'm going to encourage you to become a premium subscriber. That way you get early access to every episode and you get exclusive video content. And you're one of those special people that really help the podcast keep moving forward. I'm grateful for all of you who have signed up to become premium subscribers. You can do that right now. It's really easy at my website, andychristman.com. While you're there, you can check out my radio show, Worship with Andy Christman, and sign up for the newsletter. That way you don't miss a thing happening here at the podcast, my radio show, and whatever I'm doing in worship around the world. Okay, enough of that. Let's get to this incredible conversation with my friend, Gary Chapman. I'm finally getting to talk to Gary Chapman. We have been going back and forth.
We have.
For how long now? A few months.
It's been at least a few months, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm glad we could finally work this out. And you and I have had some, well, I will say I've had some intersections with you. You may not have known that you had intersections with me.
I may not have been paying attention.
But I first saw you opening for Amy back in like 78, 79 maybe. I remember where I was. It was Waco Hall on the Baylor University campus.
I remember it actually.
And you opened for her and played for her.
Yeah.
And then I saw you again when I was in Truth.
Mm-hmm.
You and Smitty.
Right.
We're somewhere, maybe Lakeland, Florida, and you knocked on our bus door. You want to talk to Roger.
Oh, I remember that.
And you guys are so kind. I was starstruck. I think me and Marty were the only ones on the bus at the time.
Yeah.
And we're just like, are you kidding me? And you guys are so nice, so kind. And then, you know, we were on your TV show, you know, several times. Mm-hmm. We saw you many times just through the years in the studios and on tour. And then most recently, really, that the time we worked together, it would have been 2004. I did a deal with your record label, Shelter Records. And my only solo record came out went through distribution through your label.
Yep.
And got to know you a little bit more there. And then, you know, I've just followed your career ever since. You're timeless. You're ageless. You look great.
I'm old. Dude.
We all are, aren't we, at this point? And you thank know, God we are.
Well, yes and no. I got to tell you, I'm so 12 on the inside. It's ridiculous. It's a little embarrassing. Seriously.
Well,
I've got four kids, 36-year-old son, daughters, 34, 32, and 10.
Wow.
I'm that guy.
Wow.
And it's awesome.
So you got your grandkids and your kids.
Absolutely. At the same age. Yeah. My second grandkid is due in 2 months.
Congrats.
April 1st. I hope like everything do, that it you? Actually hits on that day. It'll be so much fun. No, I think I have found the fountain of youth. Adopt a child. Just do it. My wife and I adopted this little girl 10 years ago. And when we decided to do it, my wife is a little younger than I am. Okay, she's a lot younger than I am. But it's cool. She's what we call in the South an old soul.
Yeah.
And I'm what we call an idiot.
That's so perfect.
It balances out perfectly. No, she's awesome. When we married, she didn't want to have kids. I was like, it's cool. I got three. They're right there. And about 3 or 4 years into the marriage, she said, you know, I don't know if it's that I didn't want to have kids or if I'd just never been with somebody that I wanted to have them with. Okay, I know how this works, right?
Yeah.
My kids are the best thing I ever did. Can't say no. Can't say no. And we were, it's a long story that, that gets physical and you don't need to hear about my vasectomy reversal, but.
no, thanks. I don't.
We were 2 weeks away from like in vitro and we got a call from our realtor, weird. My wife answers the phone. It was on a Wednesday night and we're watching television. Her phone rings. I hit pause. I'm sure messing with my television or playing a game or whatever. I'm not paying attention. And she's on the phone for maybe a full minute, but my memory of it kind of with one ear, hey, great to hear from you. Yeah. Well, no kidding. Well, interesting. Sure. All right. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Hangs up the phone. She turns to me and says, how do you feel about adoption? Okay. I didn't connect the question to the phone call at all. And as you might guess,
yeah,
given a soapbox, I tend to get on it. And I did. I was like, you know what? I think it's the most amazing thing. I mean, it is the picture of our relationship with God. It is. We are adopted into that family because of Jesus. I think it's amazing. And then I went for the mat. I said, also, if you're not as willing, if you're pro-life and you're not as willing to adopt a child if you're able, as you are to go picket at an abortion clinic, I think you're a hypocrite. She said, great. We're meeting the birth mom on Friday.
You're like, wait a second. Serious.
2 days later, we have lunch.
Wow.
With the birth mom. And at the time, you know, she had said that she wasn't considering any other options, as they mm-hmm. say. And now that, you know, we're years down the road, she's still, you know, it's an open adoption. She's a great girl. And now we know that it was scheduled for Monday. The abortion was scheduled for Monday.
Oh, wow.
And so we, I can't even think about her not being here. She's an amazing kid. And when it all came down, I told Cassie, I said, listen, this is either going to kill me or it's going to put 30 or 40 good years on my life because I flatly refuse to be the old dude on the sideline at the soccer game. I'm not in denial. I know it's coming. I have a calendar. I know what year it is. I know how long I've been breathing, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not ready to be that guy yet. So if it's within my power to affect the quality of the length of that, I can't affect the actual length. That's in God's hand. But to affect the quality, I'm gonna take care of business. So I've always tried to stay in good shape because I like to do a lot of stuff, but not, I mean, I started hitting it really hard and doing bizarre things. Like I'm the one of those guys that freezes every day.
Oh, really?
Oh,
do,
I do it.
Do you cryo or do you get in the,
I do whatever's ice bath there. If I've got funding and access to cryo, I do it.
Yeah.
If not, I just get cold. Yeah. I just do the ice thing.
My son-in-law's into it big time. In fact, he's amazing. He's got an ice bath. We bought it for him for his birthday.
He's
got it in his backyard and I'm staying with him this week. And he's like, we're getting in it in the morning. I'm like, all right, let's do it.
Do it.
I know like 70-year-old women that are doing it.
It's amazing.
And they swear by it.
I got to tell you, it's an incredible thing. And I'm just really trying hard to stay fit, to keep up, right? And truth be known, my 66-year-old self could whip my 30-year-old butt so bad it wouldn't even be funny. It wouldn't even be close. It's a blast. I love it.
And you just wish you, don't you wish you could take that knowledge back?
Nah, the years. I had fun.
Oh, I do. But you know, I could have made some better decisions about my body or my hair.
Oh, no, I made all great decisions. Haven't you read my bio? You kidding?
I know your story. I'm a big fan, Gary. I mean, listen, you're an inspirational artist to me. Just the music you created early on in your career, and then we were contemporaries in Four Hymns Day. Mm-hmm. Just really loved all the music that you're a part of. Can we go back to the beginning? To
anywhere you want to go.
The beginning of your Christian music career.
I should have said this at the outset. There are no boundaries for me.
Okay.
I
have a few.
I gave them
up. So maybe I'll be the boundaries for you.
You be the boundaries because I don't have any.
Okay.
No.
Good. Thanks for the warning.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I'll be kind, but yeah.
So do I have this right? Did you come out of Abilene Christian?
No, I did not. A lot of friends that went to school there, but no, I was at Southwestern Assemblies of God College.
Oh, in Waxahachie.
Waxahachie. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. One of my best friends, roommate during that time, is the president of the college now. It's a university now.
Oh, they all are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And I could bring down that whole place.
I bet you could.
With the stories I have. No, he's a great dude. He's a great guy.
I just kind of remember you. Like for some reason, my brain puts you in the same group of people like Chris Christian and Brown Bannister. And
it's because because of the Mike Blanton, Amy connection.
Uh huh.
That's I never ran with Chris Christian at all.
Yeah.
Never. That's another story you probably don't want to hear, but
I do.
Yeah. If you want to hear it, I'll tell you.
Go ahead.
But it's okay.
That's why we're here.
So, Amy cut Father's Eyes. That's how we got introduced.
Uh-huh.
The next record was called Never Alone.
No, wait. Why did you get introduced because of Father's Eyes?
I wrote Father's Eyes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. That's the first song I ever got cut.
Wow.
First song went number one. I was like, this is nothing.
This is easy.
I just kept doing it.
Wow.
No. So the next record was called Never Alone.
Uh-huh.
Mike Blanton and Brown called me from Goldmine Studios out of the blue and said, listen, we're cutting final vocals. We're in the studio this minute cutting masters.
Yeah.
And we have five songs that don't have lyrics. I was like, what?
How is that possible?
Well, good question.
Yeah.
You worked with Brown, didn't you?
No, one song. Okay. We really tried.
No,
to hire
Brown's
him
amazing.
Many
He's
years,
brilliant.
But yeah, but, no, we never got the chance to do a whole record with him.
He did have an affinity for just going at it, and
yeah,
as it comes, let it happen. So anyway, they had committed to the songs, but the songs weren't finished at all. And so I said, yeah, I'm your guy. This is back in the days where you could go and like in a half an hour have something put on a shirt. I went to the mall to some place, and I had a shirt made, and I walked in with a shirt that said Chapman Song Repair. And I wrote those five songs. Okay. Her publishing was with Chris Christian at the time, and Brown's was too, I'm pretty sure. So
he was kind of the kingpin.
He was
at the moment.
The co-writes for those songs were, you know, obviously I'm in business with him. He didn't have my publishing, but we interacted. So I did those songs. Most of them didn't have hardly any lyrics. Some had a piece. A couple of them just were a title, just a hook or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I did them. And, you know, a month or two later, I get contracts in the mail from Chris. And they're like 17.25% and 12.875% or whatever. And I'm just like, what? And so I called him up. I reached out, shall we say. I said, what is this? This is, if two people write a song, you split it in the middle. That's the way it works. Maybe what you brought to the table wasn't much, but maybe it was the thing that made it work. That's the way it works.
I'm always in favor of that. If you're in the room
and the
song gets done, you get an equal share.
Period.
Yeah.
That was the way that I had been taught. Certainly in the country music business, that was a given.
Yeah.
You know, nobody gets hosed in country music. It's only in the Christian music. No. I said, what is this? And at least he confessed it. He said, I counted syllables.
No way.
So you started with 50% because the tracks were already done. The music is already done. I said, yeah, but I wrote the melodies for some of those things. It was just a track. Well, yeah, but the music was done. And it was just, it really wore me out. And I said, at the end of it, I said, listen, Chris, I'm going to sign these contracts and I'm going to send them back to you. And I would recommend it. Listen, I'm 19, 20 years old at the time, and he's kind of a big dog.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to sign these contracts and send them back. And I would recommend that you take one of them and frame that and put it on your wall, because it's the last signature of my name you will ever have in your hand.
Wow.
This is it. Wow. And I stuck to it.
That's amazing that you had that attitude and that drive at that age.
Well, it just seemed wrong to me.
Everybody I know that's been in the industry, it takes a few years in the industry to start to figure out kind of how things work and what's fair.
Well, it was probably a stupid move though, because it also takes you a few years to find out who you shouldn't turn against you. And he was a powerful guy. I have an oversized sense of justice. It doesn't mean that I'm always right. It just means I'm always ready to fight for it, for what I think. Uh-huh. And I just knew that it was wrong. So I said, no. Wow. And I stuck to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I mentioned earlier that the first time I saw you, you were out with Amy. Mm-hmm. You opened for her and then you played, like you accompanied her. I think it was just the two of you.
It was.
We
did that for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fantastic. And I mean, like I saw the Imperials like a couple months later with the full band and everything. Mm-hmm. And I thought both shows were equally as powerful and great.
We had a fun time.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously you guys are married for a while.
17 years.
17 years. Yeah. I was out at your ranch a couple of times. We were out there with Michael Amardian.
Right.
Making music out there at the barn.
Yep.
That's a big part of your story. It's a big part of the Christian music story.
It is.
Don't want to dwell on that, but if that's something you'd want to talk about, I think I mentioned
I don't have any boundaries.
Yeah.
None.
I want to be careful though, not to make this let's hear all the dirt.
No.
You know,
it's the best story of forgiveness and reconciliation I'm aware of. So there's no dirt. There's only forgiveness.
Well, take us through it then.
Yeah. Okay. So we married in 82. My only number one country song went number one the week that Amy and I got married. Trivia time.
Oh, wow.
A song called Finally. And we were together for 17 years. 1986, September 2nd, we came back from, like a 18-month tour. I mean, we literally took off heading west and came back from the east, one of those, mm-hmm. you know. And I, at the time, was a mess, absolute mess. I walked the aisle in my dad's church when I was 6, and I meant it. I remember the sermon. There were some virgins that had some oil and some that needed oil, and that door shut and they couldn't get in. I did not want to hear that door shut. So I walked that aisle and I meant it. And I've walked that path. I have believed since then till this instant with well-publicized varying degrees of success. During that time, I was doing cocaine. I brought my hiding into the marriage. I had two lives. I was signed to a great publishing deal on Music Row, mm-hmm. Tree Publishing. I don't know if you remember them or not, but mm-hmm. it was the big dog. And I had success early, and then Amy and I got married, and we hit it hard. A lot of success. Unlimited funding and a rebellious spirit are a bad combination.
Yeah, I bet.
As it turns out, looking back on it, in all honesty, I really didn't have a problem with cocaine. I had a problem with hiding the cocaine, with being the guy that always had it.
Yeah.
When I walked into the room, everybody knew, oh, now it's time to play, right? And I loved being that guy. I did. And the deception that goes along with it, the roots of that wounded my marriage dramatically. And that's all on me.
I know, again, just being around in that era, just going, wow, what is going on? This is like, I know him, I know her, I know,
right.
You know what, you know, never suspected this at all. And then of course you are, you know, from my memory, you are painted as a bad guy in this whole thing. And you get a little older and you're married for 30 years and you go, well, wait a minute. Hang on a second.
Just one second.
Yeah.
No, you know, but part of that again is my fault. I liked being the bad boy. I was never the perfect cookie cutter Christian singer. I never mm-hmm. was. I was always the one that would get up on the awards show and say something that nobody else would say. You know, yeah. I loved being that guy. I've enjoyed the facade of people thinking that I was crazy, like danger wise.
Yeah.
I loved that. I mean, I perpetuated that.
Where did that come from, do you think? Is that something that
flying helicopters, maybe? I don't know.
Was something you kind of grew up with? Is that, you know?
No, it's a false bravado that a lot of guys do. You know, there are very few people that get on a motorcycle for very long that don't experience that joy, that kind of twisted joy of somebody going, "You're going to kill yourself." Yeah, whatever. But the truth is, I was always super careful, always, like ridiculously so. But I loved people not knowing that. That was hiding.
Yeah.
It's all about hiding. Mm. Whatever is hidden is probably going to bite you in the end.
Yeah.
Don't hide anything is the key.
Yeah.
And I don't anymore. I don't.
Yeah.
This whole cancel culture phenomenon that mm-hmm. you know, we've been into for a few years, I laughed from the beginning. I come pre-canceled. Dude, I was canceled decades ago.
Man,
I don't care. I really don't.
Man, I kind of feel like the Christian music industry started that whole thing.
They did.
Because you didn't get canceled in the secular world. You could be married 15 times and be celebrated. You
sure.
could be a drug addict. You can be an alcoholic. You can be abusive and it's all forgiven.
Right.
You know, because you can go out and act repentant and all is forgiven.
Right.
But in the Christian music world, you have a divorce.
You have an
addiction.
Not so much anymore.
But in those days, especially in the 90s, Sandy went through it, you know, for a bit.
And, yep.
I mean, that was a cancel. You are canceled.
It's over.
Your songs are off the radio.
Yep.
Your products pulled out of the stores. You're dropped from your label.
The good news is I was never a huge artist. So I didn't lose as much as some could have.
Well, you can say that maybe in the Christian world, but I mean, again, for guys like me who wrote on your coattails and really looked up to you as an artist and what you were able to accomplish in the industry, it was a big loss. And, you know, I just remember having such a blast with you being on, was it Nashville Now?
It was originally, we changed it to Primetime Country.
Yeah, right, Primetime Country.
Same show, yeah.
I mean, just being around you, like you were larger than life.
We had a good time.
It was a good run. It was something that you could aspire to just go, there's more than just singing my songs every night.
Yeah.
There's more that you can do. There's more you can parlay this mm-hmm. career into if you'll have the guts to try some new things mm-hmm. and push forward. And then for you to be, and doing the air quotes, canceled, mm-hmm. for you to be canceled was kind of like, whoa, okay, that's a big loss for all of us in the industry.
Well, I'll tell you what, it would be a big loss for me to say what I have said so far without saying the rest.
Well, let's go then.
This is so good. This is so good. This is so God. About a year after Amy and I broke up, divorced. I hate that word. God hates it too.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
She called me and just genuinely, I mean, I know her, good grief. I know her. She said, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I see how this all wounded you and I'm so sorry. Please, can you forgive me?" And I did. We still had three little kids at the time.
Yeah.
There was no upside to distance or bitterness mm-hmm. at all. So yes, I was joyful, happy to do so. I did not have the same feelings toward Vince. He was my friend. I think I probably introduced them originally.
Mm.
And I justified my unforgiveness with the totally irrelevant fact that he never asked me for it. And it's been, I think, 7 years now. It's been a good bit. I was driving down the road, dude, minding my own business. And I mean, as close to the audible voice of God as I have gotten. It was so out of the blue. I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't thinking about it. Nothing. Just boom. "You've got to forgive him." It hit me hard, dude. I was like, what? And I said, okay, God, I'll do it. but I don't know how. I've always been pretty good at reading a room.
Yeah.
And feeling what the moment requires. And not manipulating it necessarily, but being able to deliver a good experience. That's the hosting thing. It's the performance. It's all the stuff.
Right.
It's like breathing for me. It's very easy.
Yeah.
I can do that. But this can't be manufactured. And I made a deal with him. I said, you set me up. You give me a moment.
Yeah, God doesn't mind those type of questions.
And I'll do it.
Yeah.
It took him about 3 months. I was out at, I'm not sure what they call it these days, Sky something, I think. North Star used to be. It's the old TBN facility out on Dickerson.
Oh, yeah.
Road, that production place.
Out there. Yeah, it's where Huckabee's place is out there. Yeah.
No, his is up at Twitty City.
Okay.
This is just off I-65. Nobody cares. No. I was out there doing, what was I doing? Larry Black's Country Diner, that show that he used to be out there. I don't think he still does it. Anyway, I go out there, I do my deal. I come back to my dressing room, I change clothes, throw my guitar over my shoulder, open my dressing room door, and from me to you, it's happened probably hundreds of times in the past 20 years. There's Vince. It's boom. There's that moment. Here we are, right? Yeah. And we had never discussed it. We had never made a plan, but we had a plan. And it was very effective because it's a small town, as you know. It's an even smaller community. And we're family, you know. There's functions. There's stuff that we wind up at.
Yeah.
Anytime we were in the same space together, as soon as the other one was aware that the other one was aware, as soon as our eyes lock, we pivot and we walk. Worked. Very, very effective. It worked just fine. And we did it then. And I got about 20 steps away. And dude, it could not have been more tangible if God had taken his fabulous finger and just,
You asked me for a moment.
What do you think that was? And I said, okay, you're right. Again, you're right. He's always right. And I turned around and walked back and I stepped into the open doorway of his dressing room, which was right next door to mine. I had no idea.
Wow.
He was out doing Marty Stewart's show. Mm-hmm. And as I step into the open doorway, he and his longtime manager, another friend that I lost, are laughing. Satan's last ditch attempt to stop the process, because in my mind,
they're laughing
just
at you.
Enough time. Yeah, they're laughing at me.
Right.
I'm like, nope.
That's what you're going to think. Yeah.
No, is the answer to that. No. I said, man, if you could just give me a minute, just, this won't take long. He said, okay. We walked around the corner, just me and him. I said, okay, first of all, I have no agenda, none. I'm only here to do what I know God told me to do. I'm supposed to look you in the eyes and say, I forgive you. And he threw his arms around me, instantly sobbing for an awkward time.
Wow.
And he pulled back, and I'll never forget it, to my last breath. I won't ever forget this moment. He said, there's nobody on this earth that could say anything to me that matters more than what you just said.
Wow.
Okay, we're good. Dude, we're good. It's hilarious because I've started to tell this story a bit. I never want it to be exploited. I'm not trying to sell something.
Yeah.
I don't have a book. It's in the book. I know how many, I've got a grasp now after all this time, how many literally millions of people were wounded and disillusioned and misdirected by all that came down out of that. There were a lot of people that were on the bubble of a divorce that just said, okay, screw it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah. And so
it gave license that was not.
Yeah. So I hope it's okay that I kind of launched into having you tell the story, because, you know, as we're telling the story of Christian music with so many different people, that's a cataclysmic event.
I know.
For so many, like you just said, you know, that it was there's a lot of people that were like, wait a minute, what's happening here?
Absolutely.
It's the, you know, it's literally the top of the mountain being split open. And it now happened. What do we think about what Christian music is?
Right.
And, but, you know, and that's so short-sighted.
Yeah.
It's so short-sighted because there are real people involved. There are.
But it's the human reaction. It's what
it
people
is.
Do.
It is. But, you know, man, it's just, I don't want you to continue, but it makes me think of the power of forgiveness.
That's
because
amazing.
So many of us are walking around with guilt, guilt of bad decisions, guilt of how we've hurt someone. And we can forgive ourselves and we can understand that God forgives us, but it's until the person that we've offended says with their own mouth, I forgive you. It's such a powerful tool to allow people to drop that last bit of guilt that they're holding on.
Yep.
You know, it's what the Bible tells us, man, before you even take communion, if you need to go forgive someone, you're holding something against, you better go do it, because this is not the will of God, is for us to hold each other.
Absolutely.
And hold that guilt because it is a power that we have. And, man, I just, wow.
I tell you, I can't tell you, because I've told this story, I think this is like the second time I've actually said it in a public forum.
Yeah.
A few months ago. Do you know Brad Stein?
I do.
He does a podcast.
Yeah.
And I was not intending to do it, but I have known that I needed to at least begin the process for some reason. And now I know. You cannot believe the number of people that have just said, thank you. Thank you. Hearing that caused me to go to X and say Y and this, and everybody, I promise you, there's not one person in your life that is old enough to complete three or four sentences that doesn't need to forgive somebody.
Yeah.
We hurt each other. Everybody hurts each other. The devil's here to steal, kill, and destroy. And if he can destroy a relationship with a shred of unforgiveness, he will do it. And we cannot participate in that. You can't do it. You're batting for the other team if you do. And I did it for a long time. And I didn't even know that I struggled with it. I thought, you know, redneck me growing up in the middle of Texas, hey, if you mess around with me, you got it coming, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's self-preservation.
But it's not the truth.
Right.
The truth is forgiveness is the process. It's how we get to God. It's how we pave the way for him to do his work.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive everybody that you're thinking about forgiving. Do it. Do it right now. I'm on two different healing and deliverance teams. Long story. I never did want to get into that. When there was any kind of demonic activity in the Assembly of God church I grew up in, I ran. It scared me. And that is not the case anymore. I do not run. I almost run toward it. There's nothing like getting in a fight you know you're going to win, dude. It's amazing. Wow. But because I do it all the time, my awareness of the trickery and the subtle, tiny ways that the enemy works his way into a relationship or a family or a situation of any kind, every single one of them gets down to forgiveness. There's some trauma. Usually it's an amazing, shocking, scary number. Were abused as a child. You know, a woman that's been raped. Some traumatic event opens the door for that to get in there. And then it says, oh, I found a home. I'm comfy here. And until you deal with that, and the last thing that makes it leave, the last thing that makes that demonic chump leave that sweet soul is when they realize and genuinely forgive who hurt them.
Wow.
It's so powerful. It makes a demon run, dude. It's amazing. It's the coolest thing ever. Wow. I love it.
That's one of the last lessons Jesus taught us, wasn't it?
He said that's what we would do.
Yeah.
He said we would do that.
Yeah. And he told the people that were crucified, and Father, forgive them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically said, I forgive you.
Yeah, he did.
For what you're doing here. Wow. I just love your story, and I'm grateful that you feel the freedom to share it and to, you know, just talk about your life change, because that's really what it's all about. You know,
the fun part is that the stories that have happened after that.
Yeah.
Like when we run into each other now.
Yeah.
you know, side stage at the Opry one night. He's there. I'm like, hey, rather than going that way, we go this way now.
Yeah.
We come together. He's hilarious. He always was. We laugh and we both start watching the movie because over his shoulder, there's a movie. Over my shoulder, there's a movie. And it's people in the movie saying, what is happening?
Yeah.
Why are they not hitting each other? It's so hilarious and so beautiful. And I want people to know that, man, there's nothing that can't be forgiven. When our oldest daughter, Millie, got married, we were about to walk, you know, about to open the doors, the whole wedding party's in, about to open the doors, and, you know, she and I are going to walk down the aisle. It's about to happen. And I hadn't even thought about it, but I did at that instant. I said, listen, in just a little bit, like a minute or two or three, there's going to be a guy that's going to ask me, who gives this woman to this man? And I can't just say her mother and I. I don't know what I'm going to say. I just don't want it to shock you. And she's like, Dad, nothing you do shocks me. It's okay. They open the door. We walk down there. Sure enough, the dude says, who gives her mother? And I look over my shoulder and it's front row. It's Vince here. Amy's next to him. And next to her is Cassie, my wife. And I just looked over the shoulder and said, we all do.
That's perfect.
And the whole place. The next wedding, Sarah, which took place 3 months later. I don't recommend that, by the way.
I know this.
Yes.
I know this life.
Yes. So
yeah, same thing's happened to me. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she called me a couple of weeks before her wedding and said, listen, if you don't agree with this, it's cool. But I would kind of like for you and Vince to both walk me down the aisle.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Truth be known, there was a little, about an instant of, dang it.
Oh, sure.
And then it was followed by, you know what? I think that's the best idea in the world. So we each grabbed an arm and we walked her down the aisle. He's been a good father to those kids. Mm. He was. Is. He's been a good dad to them. And it was a beautiful moment. It was so awesome.
That's got to be a prayer answered for you.
Totally.
Just because, you know, your kids are going into a different home,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have any control over that.
True.
You know, and to, you know, that's a real blessing through all of that. Can't you just see God's hand? It's amazing how God doesn't run off.
No.
He doesn't give up on us. He stays through the tough times and everybody else leaves.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about crawling down into your deepest, darkest hole,
yep.
for that period of time, he was there with you, obviously.
Absolutely.
And setting all of this up.
Yep.
And again, so many of the people that I talk to on this podcast, there's a thread of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are cataclysmic events
sure.
that happen to them. There are broken marriages. There are deaths of children. There are, the death of career, which can be, you know, just as devastating as so much of that, that when they can sit here years later and tell the story and go, man,
mm-hmm.
but you know what? God's good.
Yeah.
And I'm still here and I'm still able to tell my story. And that is a win that you can't imagine when you're going through it at the time.
Dude, it's incredible. My only, and I know it's going to change. I can feel it, quite frankly. My only, the shred of string that remains from that little piece of life, because of the relative blacklisting that occurred, it wasn't just radio stations, it was churches.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult for me to get gigs to go. And the irony is I learned early on to be objective about myself, my own material and my voice and my playing and all of it. Cause if I'm not, I'm going to be lost. I'm going to just be pretending. Right.
Yeah.
So I produce me. I'm better now than I ever was in my life.
Wow.
And I'm writing more songs that I know are absolutely directly dropped on me. I describe it as a song shaped bus that you don't see coming, just stepping off a curb and it mows you down.
Wow.
That's happening to me all the time now. It used to be very rare.
Yeah.
It was once every two or three years or whatever. It's pretty much every time now. I'm writing things that I know are important or useful at the very least to what I know is coming. I know that God's about to reveal himself to this planet like we've never seen before.
Oh, I hope so.
Dude, I'm just telling you, I'm not a prophet. I'm not. Don't claim to be. I also don't claim to be an idiot necessarily on this issue. I know that God's about to do something. I don't know what it is, but I know it's going to be so powerful, so clear, that every Christian and every Muslim and every Buddhist and every Hindu and every person, every color, every breathing human is going to look at each other in the eye and say, that was God. Okay, once you realize that he's here, you got to deal with it.
Yeah.
You got to make a choice. And that's going to usher in a thing so big that revival is not even going to be a word. It's so much bigger than that. I don't know what we're going to call it, but there's going to be, I'm saying there's a billion souls coming into the kingdom. I think it's a global, crazy, unbelievable move of God. And I want to be up to my eyeballs in it. It wakes me up every day. Oh. I know it's coming.
Wow.
I cannot wait. It's going to be so much stinking fun.
That's exciting. I mean, it is we see it all through the Bible that, you know, in the last days.
It's coming.
It's coming.
Well, evil's getting worse and worse. I actually see it on a, and that's promised as well.
Right.
But so is Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome. Dude, this fight's over. That's the thing I learned, and I learn it every time in Deliverance. The fight that you're fighting, it's already over. It was over 2,000 years ago. That when he walked out of that tomb, every demon had to flee. Everything happened at that moment. The rest of it, God doesn't have a watch. He doesn't live in time. This is already done. We're walking it out, and it's awesome. I wake up every day so thrilled to be breathing in this window of history. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I can't say it as beautifully as you just did, but there's come a point in my life too, and this is one thing I think, I don't know why, what point we get to in life where we kind of, we see the curtain pulled back more than ever before, and you go, oh, what was I so worried about?
Exactly.
Or what was I striving to do to please God for so long when it was done at the cross? And the moment that I gave my life to him, God's good with me.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the things, I work with a lot of worship pastors that are really struggling for the approval of their performance and the approval of the songs that they write. And, you know, and am I any good at this? Does God even like what I do? My pastor doesn't like what I do. My peers don't like what I do. And I must not be any good at this. And I don't know if maybe it's just a certain point in life you get to where you go, well, wait a minute. I mean, God should have been done with me by now.
Yeah.
Or God should have, you know, if some of the things I've heard about God in my life are true, you know, and lightning bolts should have come out and just taken me out and God go on to somebody else, but he doesn't, because God is good and he's good with us and he loves us. And, it does make you wake up in the morning differently when you can really come to terms with the fact that you don't have to do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
He's there.
Okay. I'm about to tie a couple of things together that are going to be important to you tomorrow morning. The whole freezing thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better. I've done it every day since December 1st, 2019.
Wow. That's what I'm afraid of. I'm like,
no, it's awesome. I've got some friends that live out in Kingston Springs and out on a farm, and Brush Creek is the border on the back of it. They had at the time in 2019, their son was 20 years old, and he had a predictable number of 20-year-old redneck friends.
Yeah.
And every January 1st, they'd had this chili cook-off thing, and just a big, you know, a big, let's watch a football game and just a party. But it started with a polar plunge in that creek.
Yeah.
Okay. What started as let's go get in the water turned into, because of the level of competitiveness in 20-year-old boys, it turned into who can stay in the water longest.
Yeah.
Okay. I decided I was not going to let those little chumps beat me. So December 1st, I actually went into training and I started lengthening the amount of time that I could endure freezing water. So by January 1st, dude, I was doing the backstroke when those boys were screaming and running out of the water. And I just said, okay, I love this. And I learned what it actually physically does to your body. It's an amazing thing. The energy level that gets maintained throughout the day is incredible. It's an incredible thing. Anyway.
I heard somebody say the other day that it's the hardest thing you'll do all day. Yeah. And if you can do it first thing in the morning,
yeah, you're done.
Everything else is a breeze.
Here's how I endure it. It's the only thing I have found that makes the 3 minutes, the 4 minutes, whatever you choose to freeze.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop it from hurting, but the only thing that works is worship.
Wow.
Dude, when I look so forward to it every day. When I get in there and I start, I mean, it hurts. If I start talking to God, and I start singing his praise, and I start letting the Spirit speak through me, think of my kids and what needs to happen in their lives right now, just whatever it is, when I go there, the time goes boom.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's so easy, and you kill two giant birds.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to do it. Again, I'll tell my listeners here, keep me accountable to this because
And if he says it wasn't a big deal, he's lying. It hurts.
Yeah. Well, I went to my chiropractor the other day and I go regularly and I really believe in chiropractic care. And, they had a sauna, like a sauna blanket, kind of like a little, what do you call it that you sleep in the camping?
A sleeping bag.
Sleeping bag. Yeah. Thank you. It's like a sleep. Yeah. And you that's get awesome. In it and that's what they were telling me. Said every one of them there, in fact, including, you know, the older woman that works there, she said, I get in that every day. I get in it for about 10 minutes as much as I can stand and then right into the cold plunge.
I do the freezing in the morning. And then, my wife for last Christmas, not this most recent, but last Christmas got me this. I looked at it at first. I was like, this is cheesy. And it turns out it's really good. It's portable, but it lives in our bedroom and it's like this zip up thing.
Yeah.
And I turn that thing on and it gets way hot and I'm in there for, I do 15 minutes and then go to bed and sleep like a stone, dude.
Really?
Oh my gosh. It's
wow.
It's the best.
I love that.
Cause both of them have value.
Yeah. At our age, you know, I know.
What are you saying?
No, I'm 57, almost 58.
You're a child. And,
well, I don't feel like a child. I just remember when I turned 50.
Yeah.
I was like, why does that hurt? Maybe I don't know why. Why is that hurting now? Like it didn't hurt last week.
Yeah.
There's something about the warranties run out. The warranty will. And now I look for ways. You do get older, and I told you when you walked in the door, I'm just like, man, you look great.
I got to tell you, if you work out really hard, you'll be perpetually sore. So you can blame all the old age aches and pains on, I'm at the gym all the time. It's killing me, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm okay.
Yeah. I had a really good friend of mine who used to be in Strikeforce. Remember Strikeforce? Like the power team?
Yep.
And he passed away a couple of years ago. His gift to me, I'd helped him through a really difficult time in his life. He had some head trauma, neck trauma from all those days of bashing, ice blocks with his head.
That'll happen.
It nearly killed him, but he suffered the consequences for decades. And I just, God just put me alongside him for several years to just pray with him, go to his house and sit with him. When he was just, he couldn't get up out of his chair. And God just did a work in his life, did a work in his body. And I think some of it was just the fellowship and knowing another dude cared about him and we could walk together. And so after a couple of years and he started feeling good again, he started hitting the gym and he's a beast. Do you watch Reacher?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I love that show.
So we talk all the time.
Dude's a committed Christian. Who knew?
That's incredible.
Have you seen it?
I have.
He's got a YouTube channel. I'll find it. He's got a YouTube channel that you should promote. It's ridiculous how good it is.
Okay. No, I haven't seen that yet. But
what's his name?
Alan every time Richard? We watch it, my wife goes, that's Kyle. That just reminds me of Kyle. I mean, that's kind of the big brute that he was and just a force of nature. And he told me, he's like, my gift to you for walking me through that. He said, I'm going to start training you.
That's awesome.
And I needed it at that time in my life. It was a point where I couldn't do it on my own anymore. And I couldn't find a trainer I liked. Yeah. But he took me in. He was knocking on my door at 5:30 every morning, going to the gym, calling me if it was, it's icing outside. I'm like, hey, I'm not going to.
Yeah, you are.
Test throws. You go, no, I'm already here.
Yeah, sorry.
So, yeah, I slipped and slid all the way here, but it's worth it. Get over here.
Yeah.
And so I really owe a lot to Kyle, but it is for guys our age, we got to keep moving.
Well, and here's
we got to keep working. We got to keep moving.
Yeah.
We got to keep dreaming.
Two things.
Yeah.
I think we're all basically sharks. If you stop swimming, you're going to die.
Right.
All my friends, no, all is too big a word. Most of my friends who retire, one of two things, they either summarily die outright, or they're so sad. They're just bored out of their minds. I will work until I drop because I love what I do.
Same.
Why would I not keep doing it?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And that's it. The shark, the thing. That's it.
Yeah. What's the YouTube channel?
His name is not loading, but his name is Alan Richson, R-I-T-C-H-S-O-N. Yeah, right. And he's got a YouTube channel that he puts stuff up pretty much every day. And it's awesome. I don't know the depth of his walk. I know the sincerity of his walk. And I am so glad. I want to meet him so bad. First of all, total fanboy.
Yeah.
I love that series.
Yeah.
He's just. It's hard to be a dude and not want to be that dude.
There is a revival going on.
Yes.
I feel like in Hollywood.
Yes.
And in the music industry, I'm just hearing so many people, so many of my heroes that I'm hearing their testimonies now. They've turned to Christ or, look at Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
The impact he's had, even just talking about, his Catholicism.
Sure, his commitment.
And his commitment to God, that there are, I think that's part of the revival that's coming is that we're seeing some of the high profile people that are saying, I'm going to talk about this now when it would have cost them their careers.
Mm-hmm. And they're all moving to Franklin. So just stick around. They're all coming. It is amazing the influx of California.
So tell me what you're doing now. So tell me how you stay active and what you're doing as far as music and working and all that kind of stuff.
We talked about the aforementioned step off a curb and that bus hits you. I'm encountering the bus with great regularity. I have a body of songs that I know I have to do. It's not about, certainly not about being a star, dude. I am mildly and formerly famous, and I much prefer it to what I have seen. I don't want to be that, but I do want my music to be heard. I know what God's giving me has value. And I'll send you a few things just so you know what I'm talking about.
I love it.
But it just fires me up so much to be able to contribute at this point in my life. I look at so many of my friends that have kind of stopped,
Yeah.
I do a monthly lunch with a bunch of guys. It's actually called Old CCM Dudes, which is hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, I follow that on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian Mason.
And Brian puts it all together. There's about half of them just stopped. And then about another 25% are thinking maybe they should still do it. And then another 25% are just hitting it.
Let's be honest here. It's hard.
Oh,
it's hard to shift what you once were and what you're not once known for.
Right.
And then try to keep it going in a different way. It's hard. It's hard for all of us, but the journey is worth it. Just to keep moving and see what God has for you next.
Exactly. I have to keep trying my aforementioned sense for justice.
Yeah.
I don't, like I said, I don't have to be a star, but I want to be able to impact the church in this time. I have something to say, and I have words that need to be heard, and I want to do it. And I'm praying for some booking agent to wake up and realize that I'm not quite dead yet. I've got a guy that believes in me, and he keeps saying, as soon as you get a project, I can get you gigs, right? Because I do still occasionally work, but not nearly as much as I'd love to. The problem is money, dude. It's ridiculous. These days, though, I can do most of it myself. I'm about ready to just say, heck with it. I'll just do it at my house and get done. Because the songs are screaming at me every day, and they're coming like water flowing out of a well, dude. It's ridiculous.
Well, God wouldn't give them to you,
I know,
if he didn't have a purpose for them.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
So it'll be there.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Maybe some preacher will see this and say, hey, yeah. Maybe I can risk it. Maybe he won't scare my people, but I will. No, I won't. Again, the facade of danger is not really danger. It's not. Because my ultimate goal is to win people to Jesus, dude. That's the deal. That's the only thing. That wave of songs.
Your previous guest, Jerron.
I wake up in the middle of the night with a full lyric, and I will literally pick up my phone and just mumble it into my phone and go back to sleep. And I wake up and walk into my office music space, and I will pick up a guitar and literally do it top to bottom. Just sing it.
Wow.
Okay. I can't ignore that, because that's not me. It's not me. And I can't ignore what God does. So I have to do these things. I have to get them out. I had one last night, but now I can't do it because somebody will steal it. This is such a great idea. No, I'll risk it. And if I hear this, song, I'm going to find you. No, it's kind of funny, but it's kind of not. The one thing that Jesus absolutely commanded us to do, totally, go fish. Nobody's written that, dude. Nobody has written, go fish. Have they? See, he's writing it now. He's stealing it before my eyes.
I got it. Here.
Go fish.
Yeah.
No, it'll be.
I'll give you 17.8%.
I'll take it.
How's that?
I'll take it. Let's let Chris Christian publish it just for kicks. Because you can't make money off it anymore.
No. Nope.
See, that's a drag. That's a real drag.
Yeah.
I had a very good catalog. And what was, even after getting canceled, you know, the mailbox still functions.
Sure.
But, and it was growing, you know, because things get recut and reissued and whatever. What was, honey, you should pick out what beach on which island you want to walk down for the rest of your life, has turned into, so let's think about going to dinner next month somewhere. I'm serious. It's that revenue stream, which was retirement for me, is off 98.5%.
Wow.
In the last 10 years, illegal downloads and the streaming solution. People don't buy music. Oh, they rent it.
Yeah, exactly. Just a second ago.
You don't have any music. Yeah. You don't. Unless you have a CD, you don't have music. It's not yours. You're renting. Stop paying the subscription. See how much music comes out of your device.
Yeah, before we started, I got an email on my phone from one of the streaming companies with my royalty for the quarter.
Yeah, how was it?
And it was $35. I'm like, oh.
Dude, that's strong.
Hey.
We can
go to dinner tomorrow night.
Yeah, I got early on before it actually engaged. Here's the fun part. I've never cashed a streaming check.
Really?
No. The physical checks that used to come, I just kept them all. And I'm going to wallpaper a bathroom with them.
Like 12 cents, 2 wallpaper, cents.
Yep, 17 cents, absolutely. Uh-huh. Cost them a lot more to mail me the check.
So when I was worship pastor for a long time at my church in Tulsa, and on my board in my office, I would do the same thing. I would keep all the, especially like the Canadian royalty,
international royalty.
Yeah, international, were like a penny. And like, it cost you $2 to mail this to me, and it's a penny, you know? So I would pin those up on the board. And anytime someone would come in and say they wanted to have a career in Christian music, I would go, well, just take a gander up there and see what you're going to make.
Yeah.
Just let that be an inspiration to you right there. Cause it's such where it's at right now.
It's such a weird thing though, because if God has given you that gift, you got to exercise it.
Right.
People ask me all the time, are you still writing? And my stock answer is, can you help me? I'm trying to stop, you know, counseling or something, rehab.
But, you know.
But I can't stop. It's who I am.
Well, and there will be an outlet for it somewhere. I mean, the hymn writers didn't have publishing. They didn't have, you know.
Don't get me going on hymns, dude.
You know.
The hymn, back before we paid people to write songs, they were much, much better.
Yeah.
All those songs came out of one of two sources, either extreme joy or extreme pain. Yep. Usually they're joined at the hip.
Yep.
And that is an amazing thing. Those songs still have life. Mm-hmm. You breathe on them the right way and they start burning, dude. I'm telling you, I know this. I don't know how much time you have. How much time do you have?
Well, we're unlimited here, so.
Okay, here's the deal. I have to quickly tell you about my father's death. And it's amazing. It's amazing. I just told your dude outside. He was like, what? So my dad was Assembly of God preacher. He lived with Cassie and I until he died in our house. Easter Sunday morning, right at sunrise, 2009.
Wow.
You can't write it.
Wow.
You just can't. He had Parkinson's for 8 years. Cancer for the last year and a half, multiple myeloma. It ate up the sheathing in the major nerves in the lower part of his body, so he couldn't walk. Okay, the first year and a half of my life, I'm sure he put me to bed and changed my diaper, and I got to return the favor.
Wow.
It was awesome. Best horrible experience ever. We were always very, very close, and we got closer, and it was awesome. Toward the end of his life, the last 2 weeks of his life, he went back and forth, seriously, 8 times, from here to heaven and back, 8 times, wow, without question. Here's how I know it. Well, there are a few reasons that I'm about to tell you. Toward the end of life, they offer you all the best drugs.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But unlike his idiot son, who had never ingested, he had never ingested anything that altered his consciousness. So he tried it one time and he just said, son, I can't do that.
Wow.
I don't want to be there. I want to be here until I'm there.
I said, okay. Even with all the pain he was in.
He said, okay.
Wow.
The one thing that brought him comfort was me sitting on the edge of his bed and playing and singing the songs that he had taught me 50 years previous, all the old hymns.
Mm.
And it worked. It was amazing. The power of God just settled in the room and everything was good, dude. He would just lay there, arms raised high, worshiping. So good. So I was sitting down there with him, talking to him, because, you know, you squeeze every moment when when it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And he wanted to go. He was like, please, seriously. I was just sitting down in his space in the house. This is like a house I designed and built a house out in the west side of Nashville. 2001, I started building it. We moved in 2003. My mom died while we were building it. They were going to move in. I had 3 little kids pretty much still at the time. I had a studio that I had left at the farm.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to kind of recreate a workspace like that. Bottom line, I graduated with honors from the School of Creative Justification. I could make anything make sense, right?
Yeah.
So it wound up with 14,000 square feet of me. And it was great, crazy house. His space in the house, what would have been his and my mom's space, his space in the house was directly below the master suite and bathrooms and closets and my office and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Directly below. That'll play in here in a minute. And we're just sitting there talking. And it just like in the middle of a sentence, he just locked. Just unblinking locked. No movement whatsoever. And I'm like, Dad? I got up and I went over and I'm like smacking his face and trying to feel for a pulse and it didn't seem to have breath. And I was just like, well, that's a lot less dramatic than I thought it was going to be. Right.
So you thought he was gone.
I thought he was dead.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm just sitting there just kind of drinking it in. My brother and sister live here. They both came to visit over the years and everybody came to visit. Nobody left. They all stayed. My brother's he runs the aviation department for Williamson County Sheriffs. He's a helicopter idiot and quite the skeptic. You'll hear in a minute. So Dad's just locked. And I'm thinking, I'm about to call my brother and my sister and say, okay, it happened. It kind of snuck up on me. I would have, you know, if I'd known it was coming, you know, I know you all wanted to be, I was ready for that conversation.
Right, right, right.
And he came back just like that, laughing. I mean, almost hysterically laughing, but just like a real laugh, a genuine from your gut laughter. He was one of six boys. Three of his brothers had already died. He had been visiting with his brothers and his mom and his dad.
Wow.
He was so happy to have seen them. And he had a lot to say about heaven. And I'm like, okay, I know it's not drugs. He's not doing them.
Yeah.
I know he can't lie. He's not capable. He can't lie. What's the upside? Right?
Right.
There's not one.
Right.
This happened. And I was like, wow. I went upstairs, told Cassie what happened. She's like, well, you know who he is. You know how he walks with God. Of course it happened. Yes, it's real. Like, yeah, it is. But I was almost still trying to convince myself, right? I called my brother and sister and told them what had happened. And my sister was like, that's awesome. And my brother was like, yeah, right. And I said, no, dude, I'm serious. He's a cop. What are you going to do? They're supposed to be skeptical. And I said, no, I'm serious, man. It happened. Well, it wasn't the next, it happened 8 times in that 2 week span before he died.
Wow.
It wasn't the next time. I think it was the next time, maybe in the fourth, but it had happened multiple times before. My brother was in the room. Dad and I are in the same spot. I'm sitting in a chair. He's in his recliner there, and my brother's leaned up against the wall. Okay, quick backstory. My brother's flown his whole life, 35 years with Southwest. He went from that on a Friday for mandatory retirement. He went directly into being a lieutenant in the Williamson County Sheriff's Department. And right this minute, he's flying around with a 9mm and a shoulder holster, and he can land anywhere he wants to.
Incredible.
I'm telling you, that's a bad idea. That's a very bad idea. No, he's great. He's awesome. He's my hero. He came up through aviation the hard way, though. He wanted to be a fighter pilot, and he couldn't because his eyes were bad. So he came up. It's a tough road. He crop dusted for 6 years. The last year he did it, he totaled 2 planes, wound up 80 feet upside down in an oak tree with chemicals and fuel pouring over him. And he decided at that moment that he had a guardian angel, and he named him. He didn't tell his wife. He didn't tell me where as close as brothers can get. He didn't tell his kids. He didn't tell anybody. This is between him, God, and his guardian angel, right?
Yeah.
We're sitting here talking. Dad locks up. Now, by now, I'm kind of like used to it. I'm like,
yeah,
told you. That's it.
It's 5 o'clock.
That's it.
There
time
goes.
To go. No, it's different times of the day. That's a weird thing. Anyway, but yeah. I said, okay. Glad you're here. That's it. And he said, what? And he did exactly what I did. He came over and he's like smacking him. Dad, wake up, wake up. Nothing. Breath, pulse, the whole thing. I said, just relax. He'll be back in just a minute. It was always about 4 or 5 minutes. Mm. Sure enough, he comes back laughing every time. And he looked up, he saw my brother, and he motioned him come in because he really liked to communicate. And Parkinson had gotten a lot of his voice. So if you really wanted to talk, you need to get down close. And he leans in close. And my dad looked at my brother. And he said, I just met Ralph. He told me you've given him fits your whole life and you need to slow down a little bit. Okay. He buckles. He's like, he knows that nobody knows. Nobody but him.
Incredible.
And God and Ralph know about Ralph.
Wow.
And it was amazing, dude. It was just like, okay, this is, I didn't know. It was for me as much as him. It's like, okay, whatever shred of doubt I was harboring, I give it up. I'm done with that. Okay, he went into a coma, for lack of a better word, on Good Friday, appropriately.
Yeah.
He didn't wake up. And my sister's a nurse. She made a pallet next to his bed. I didn't have her grenade, so I couldn't get her out of the house. She's there. She made a, like I said, she's on a pallet. About 5 o'clock Sunday morning, that Easter Sunday morning, she hears his breathing change a little bit. And you know, those things get your attention when you're in that situation. And she heard voices in the room above her at that point. And she thought, great. If this is it, Gary and Cassie are awake. I won't have to wake them up. Only we were not awake.
Wow.
I was in the middle of easily the best dream I've had so far. I want more. Aren't old men supposed to dream dreams?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm old.
Yeah.
Give it up, God. Come on. No, if I only have that one, it's enough because I'm in my dream, which literally played out to a T 2 hours later. I'm standing on the driveway out leading to his part of the house. Like you go past the front of the house and take a left and mm-hmm. descend, and that's his spot. We're standing there silent. My sister, my brother, and we're just watching the guys from Harpeth Hills Memorial Gardens out on Highway 100, just like 3 miles from the house down the road, wheel his body out to take him to the funeral home. Mm-hmm. Not saying a word, just standing there. This is hard for me because you know I love words. I don't have them for this part. Like that, he was standing there with us, and he made me look like I just died of cancer. He was so strong. He was so powerful. You could feel it. You could feel his power. It was crazy. He made me look like I just died of cancer. He had gone from 190 pounds or so to 80 something, right? Yeah. Oh, I cannot tell you what he looked like. I can't. I love words. I don't have them. I've tried. I tell this story and I get to this point and have to apologize because I don't have them. He was perfect. He was beautiful. He had on this garment. It was like a dark kind of almost black kind of purple thing. And it was like a closest thing I can come to describe. It's like an Olympic swimmer would wear something. It was just skin tight.
Yeah.
You could see like the sinews. It was just, he was so beautiful. So perfect. And he's yap, yap, yap. And he looked to be about 35, give or take.
Yeah.
Right in there.
Yeah.
I wonder about that. Are we all going to be 33 in heaven? Are we all going to be the age that Jesus was when he died? That would be cool.
That would be really cool. That's, anyway. That's a question I've always thought about too.
Yeah. Unless you're a kid, they should let the kids stay kids.
Right.
Up to 33, then we'll cut it off right there. No, he was just, he's just going. He's yapping, just going, going, going. And I remember in the dream thinking, I should pay attention to this because I'll bet you this is important information. And I couldn't. I couldn't focus on it. I couldn't do anything but stare at him. Just drink it in. It was almost like he shined. It was just wild. The only thing I remember him saying, he said, "Kids, as much as I did my best to teach you about heaven, I was right, but I was wrong because there's so much more." And like that, my phone rang in this world. And it was my sister telling me that moment he had just taken his last breath. So I'm telling you without question, God gave me that moment. I needed that moment. And he gave me this incredible gift. I walked the aisle, like I said, in his church when I was 6. And I meant it. I meant it. It was real. And I never stopped through every high and every low place, I never stopped believing that Jesus was who he was, that he was my savior. I never stopped believing until that morning. And I stopped believing and I started knowing. And it's very, very different. I can't describe the difference except that it changed everything for me. Everything. I know this is really here. I'm not one of them. It's not necessarily a matrix. Yeah, there's a table here.
Yeah.
But what we see, what we live in, what we're surrounded by, it is not where we're going, man. It is not real. It's not. In the eternal sense, this is not real. This is not real. It's not. He doesn't have a watch. He's got the whole story. He's got the whole world. It's all done already.
Yeah.
And when we're trapped in time and space, he is not. And when we're not, God only knows what's waiting for us. I just know that I'm ready and I want to take as many people as I can with me. That's all I know.
Hey, thanks for listening. Join me every Monday for new stories from the Christian music industry and beyond. If you want more content like this, along with a lot of great music, join me for Worship with Andy Christman, airing on 500 stations around the world every weekend. And when you get a sec, run over to my website, andychristman.net, for information about my professional vocal coaching and an incredible new resource for worship pastors called The Worship Table. See you next time on the One Degree of Andy podcast.